Morning, everybody. Right, well, I have to start with a bit of confession. I find speaking on this subject difficult and challenging. I really am not a natural evangelist, and I'm guessing that some of you will feel that way too. But I found as I went through this passage that there were questions that came into my mind that I began to find some answers to, which I found helpful and encouraging. So I'm going to share about four questions with you in the hopes that you too find them helpful, even if you are actually an evangelist and do find it quite easy to go out and talk to people. We've heard a long passage. There's an awful lot that we could talk about, and it might sound quite familiar to you, and that's because it actually closely parallels a similar occasion in Luke chapter 9, where Jesus sends out the 12 disciples with a very similar mission, but it is different. And one of the real first differences is about, well, who does Jesus actually send? So that is my first question, who? And you might think, well, that's a bit obvious, Judith, just read it. Verse 1, the Lord appointed 72 others, so he sent out 72 people. But who actually were they? We don't know. We know absolutely nothing else about them. We're not told who they were. I think we probably have to assume they were men because of the culture of the day. Possibly not. We don't know their names. We don't know where they were from. We don't know how long they followed Jesus. We don't know what happened to them afterwards. What I think we can guess is that they were committed following Jesus, and he knew who they were. He trusted them to go out on this mission for us. And I find that really, really encouraging. These are ordinary people who Jesus knows, who he sends out. And in verse 2, we're told that he says to them, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest to send out workers. And I think that implies that Jesus had been asking his father, who should I send out? And he chose these 72 people. You know, probably none of us are going to be particularly famous for God. Probably none of us are going to write great books or become archbishops or become famous, you know, people like Billy Graham going around and spreading the word to millions. Our names probably won't be remembered by future generations. It doesn't matter if we are known to God and he chooses to send us. And we choose to go. I think too, that is interesting that he said he sent 72 others. Other to whom? Others, not the disciples. We hear so much about the disciples, don't we, in the Gospels. I think we can think sometimes they're the only people who did anything. Not so. In this case, other people are being sent. It's not just the superstars. Jesus is involving everybody. He is inclusive in his ministry. And it's telling that word, again in verse 1, the Lord appointed them. This wasn't casual. This wasn't random. He didn't just turn round to his followers and go, right, you over there, off you go. This was careful. This was thought through. They're appointed. They're being told, I'm sending you. You're important. You've got a mission. I want you to go. This is not accidental. He's sending them with his authority. The number 72 is actually quite significant. Commentators say that it's linked to the number of nations that are listed in Genesis chapter 10. And so it's often taken to be setting up that expectation that in the future, his followers are going to be sent out to all the nations of the world. And this is supported by that command. You might not have heard it in that long passage, but he says, eat whatever's set before you. Well, they might have been going out to places that were outside of Israel. They might be asked to eat things that weren't appropriate for Jews. And Jesus is saying, eat it anyway. And again, this is anticipating that, reaching out beyond the Jewish world and going out to the whole world in the future. He's setting up the pattern for the church. And so that tells us, well, who is sent? Well, it's us, because we're part of that ongoing church. We all have a part in that mission to carry on his work. So that's the who. We're all sent out. So my second question is, where? And again in verse 1, we do get beyond verse 1, by the way. again in verse 1, he says that he's sending you everywhere that he is going. And again, there's this idea of inclusiveness. Everywhere and to everyone. It's not just to Jerusalem. It's not just to the important places. It's not to the important people. It's to anyone who is willing to listen. He wants everyone to have that chance to hear about him. And I think that's important because, as we've already talked about this morning, it's about his care. His care for everybody, his love for everyone. And if that's God's attitude, that needs to be our attitude, doesn't it? And we need to be praying for that heart, for that care that he has. I think it's important too that it is to everywhere, because it means that it doesn't matter whether we get sent abroad, or it doesn't matter whether we actually never really get to go anywhere other than our immediate area. Because if everyone matters to Jesus, then it doesn't matter who we're talking to and where we're talking to them. It just matters that we're doing it. In this instance, though, we are told that Jesus told them to concentrate on the harvest. Jesus was very practical, very pragmatic, wasn't he? He knew, okay, it's only 72 people. Put your effort in where it's going to count. Find out who's interested and concentrate on those. And it's interesting, he's confident, isn't he, that there is a harvest. There are people who want to listen, who are going to be interested. I don't know about you, but I'm sometimes almost taken aback and surprised when somebody asks me a question about my faith. We live in such a secular society that perhaps we get used to people not being interested, and we can expect that to be the case. But we have to be expectant that there are people out there who the Spirit is moving in, and be ready and willing to explain the hope that we have. I want to just say something very briefly about this idea of the people of peace, which Jesus talks about quite a lot. In verse 6, he says, if a man of peace is in the house, your peace will rest on them and stay in that house. Who are then these people of peace? I think if we think of peace as not just not aggressive, but as that sense of wholeness and completeness. People of peace are those people who are willing to extend hospitality, but it's those people who are wanting wholeness, are seeking harmony and completeness in their lives. And they're going to be open to God. It reminded me of the Sermon on the Mount, where Jesus says that the peacemakers will be blessed and called the sons of God. And there's just something about the kingdom of God, about bringing wholeness and harmony, that is going to appeal to people who are seeking for peace in their lives. So just a brief thought about that, because it was quite a big feature of the passage. So that's who and where. So it's all of us, everywhere. It's sort of fairly broad, isn't it? So what are they told to do? And by implication, then, what are we told to do? Well, first of all, they're told to take it seriously and urgently. And it's interesting that in the previous section, at the end of Luke 9, we hear about three people who say they want to follow Jesus, but then actually find excuses not to do it. They procrastinate. And we're told, don't do that. In contrast, these 72 do it. They go. And Jesus says, you know, this is important. You know, if harvest isn't gathered in, it will spoil. Don't put it off. Get out there. And so he says, you know, don't stop on the road for a cozy gossip. Don't move around between different lodgings looking for the one with the most comfy bed, or whether the local bake-off champion lives who's going to give you a really nice dinner. get on with it. And I guess all of us, certainly I know that sometimes I miss those chances when I could have said something, and I think afterwards, oh, I missed that opportunity. You know, we need to be looking out, don't we, for those chances to speak about or show the love of God to people. And there were two things, really, that Jesus told them to do. In verse 9, he says, heal the sick who are there. So there's something about this very immediate needs, just like the street pastors are doing, going out and seeing what are the immediate needs of people, whether that's putting them in a taxi, having a chat with them, praying for healing, listening to their problems, meeting an immediate need. So many ways that we can do that, and it's really important. And I think it's something that every one of us can do every day, look for a needs. But Jesus also says, tell them that the kingdom of God is near you. And so along with meeting those needs, we need to be looking to the future and helping people to find that future hope that we have in Jesus. And what they're doing here is really echoing John the Baptist. If you think back to what he did, you know, the purpose of him coming was to point people to Jesus. And as these 72 go ahead, they're getting people thinking about Jesus, aware that he's in the area, interested in him, thinking about the questions of God. You know, it's a bit like when I go to work every day, I walk past the race course in Worcester, and there are quite often flyers up on the lampposts. Quite often it's for the circus that comes and pitches on the race course. And it's telling people, it's on its way, it's coming, this is where you come to take part in this activity. And that's what these people were doing. They were getting people excited. And I just had this momentary thought, you know, maybe that helps to explain all those vast crowds that then turned up and needed feeding, because they'd heard about Jesus, perhaps because those 72 had gone out and told them. However, there's also something else that Jesus said, which I think is the most challenging part of this talk. He says that, you know, if people reject him, we have to be ready to tell them what they're missing out on. And that's hard, isn't it? In our postmodern world, it's not done to say that actually we're right about this, that Jesus is the way and truth and the life. He's not just one of lots of equally valid options. But that is what he says and what we must be prepared to do. And I've already mentioned that this passage points to the early church. And if you just read through the rest of the New Testament, you see this pattern time again. People going out in pairs, Paul and Barnabas, for instance. Meeting needs, pointing to the kingdom. So in Acts 2 at Pentecost, Peter speaks about the coming of the kingdom and how Jesus is the expected Christ. Right at the beginning of the church, there he is, saying the kingdom is near. In Acts chapter 3, Peter and John heal a beggar in the name of Jesus and then speak again repeatedly to different groups about Jesus. In Acts chapter 5, we're told that crowds come to be healed. In Acts chapter 10, Cornelius is the first non-Jew mentioned by name to come to faith, the church going out to the nations. In Acts chapter 13, Paul and Barnabas meet hostility and rejection, and they do actually warn the Jews what they are doing, and they do literally shake the feet, dust from their feet, before turning to the harvest of Gentiles in Antioch who do want to listen. And it goes on and on and on. This pattern becoming the pattern of the church down the ages. I need to move on to question 4. That's what they did and what we can do. What else can we learn? There are some other things that I just want to mention briefly. First of all, we do need to be dependent upon Jesus. If you look at it, those 72 were sent off with no spare possessions, no manual, no sermon notes, no sat nav, no lastminute.com booking. Just out there. Just go out there. Just do it. Trust in God's provision and support. And they found with joy that even though Jesus wasn't with them physically, They had his authority. They had the power of the Spirit. So when we make ourselves dependent on God, we can expect that too. But also they were dependent on each other. They were sent out together. It's so much easier, isn't it? Especially if evangelism isn't our strength or gift, to do it with somebody else. You know, recently when I was visiting my brother who was not very positive about the church, it was really helpful when my daughter was with me, because one of us could ask him, would you like us to pray for you? And the other one would be praying for him anyway, you know, even if he didn't know it. And for me, it was just much easier to do that with somebody else. Or you might know people who are really good at naturally bringing Jesus into the conversation. It just seems to happen. So why not think about inviting a friend round for coffee or a meal or whatever, and inviting one of those people who have that gift of evangelism to help you and support you and encourage you to bring that conversation about. Or if you are one of those people for whom evangelism is really easy, you know, who could you be mentoring? Perhaps you could invite somebody else to join you so that you can encourage them and help them in something that's not perhaps as easy for them. So dependence on God, dependence on each other. Secondly, we can have expectation that we're going to see the Spirit at work, just as the 72 do. Sometimes God tells us very clearly, very directly, what to do, what to pray for. I remember some years ago I was helping at an Alpha course. There was a young married couple there, and I felt very strongly I needed to go and offer to pray for them and for their marriage, which they agreed. And as I prayed, this verse came into my head from Ecclesiastes that says that two are stronger than one, and that a cord of three strands rarely breaks. And I prayed that for their marriage, that God would be the third strand in their marriage. And as I finished, the woman looked at me and said, well, that verse is engraved on our rings, on our wedding rings. And God had just put that thought into my head, that this was right to pray for them at that time. And it really excited me that God was present. And in that act that I was doing, that act of obedience, to pray what he put into my head. We do need to be realistic, though. You know, Jesus said, not everyone's going to be interested. Don't get despondent about it. It's Jesus they're rejecting, not us. And you know what? Jesus is following behind us, and there's still a chance for him to turn up and to have an impact in those lives. But we do need to be a little bit realistic. It's not always going to be easy. And finally, I just want to mention integrity. Jesus does this out of love for people. And it's not there for our glory. It's not so that we look good. It's not that we can, you know, count the notches. It's for him. It's all about him. And in doing so, we enrich our relationship with him. Jesus says, don't rejoice that the Spirit submit to you. Rejoice that your names are written in heaven. You know, we can rejoice that through doing this, we get to know Jesus better. So that's four thoughts. Who goes? Everyone. Where do we go? Everywhere. What do we do? Immediate needs and future hope. And how do we do it? You know, independence and expectation and with integrity. I spoke the other week about asking God in the morning, what do you have for me to do? And I'm trying really hard to do that. I don't remember every day, but it's something I'm trying to build into every day. And I think also we can ask God to grow our compassion and love for his world. I want to finish with a quote from Isaiah chapter 6. Isaiah was somebody else who was sent out by God, and somebody else who at first was a bit nervous and unsure. But when he did, when he obeyed and went in dependence on God, he did amazing things, as you can read in the 66 or whatever it is chapters of Isaiah. So I just encourage you, if you wish, to end by saying these words with me. And then I heard the voice of the Master, whom shall I send? Who will go for us? I spoke up, I'll go, send me. So I'm going to invite the band now to come up, and we're going to sing a song which talks about that heart of God, the love and compassion he has for the world. And you might wish to use it as a prayer that we might grow in our understanding of that love and see the world increasingly as he does.